Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. It's good to have you here. My name's Marcus and I've got Jim with me.
Hello.
Pete.
Hello.
And Luke.
All right.
Obviously on the weekend we had the terrible news that Gary Speed passed away. Awful stuff for a man of 42 to lose his life.
Yeah, I mean, it's so unbelievable, and we're sort of used to hearing overreaction and overstating things all the time, but I mean, this is about as horrendous as it could possibly get for a family that loved him so much. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, for me, waking up and just sort of, it's that sort of 5 minute window where you sort of going, yeah, I've misread something here, there's something,
yeah, absolutely,
there's something not,
yeah,
quite right. And I mean, for me, it was like, personally, he's up there, he's easily in my top.
He's a Premier League great.
Top 10 Newcastle player, certainly. Yeah. He was with us for, like, I think he played like 230, 240 matches for Newcastle, but he's up there with like Rob Lee and Peter Beasley, and, you know, he's such a hard working footballer and never sold anyone out, just a gentleman.
Well, by all accounts, a great man as well. I mean, not just a great footballer, yeah, and a dedicated professional who got hundreds and hundreds of appearances under his belt. He was a guy who, by all accounts, to everyone who knew him, was a top person, and a lovely guy to be around. And no one had a bad word to say about him.
That's what comes through from all of the things we're seeing, that that he was just a guy respected by everybody, sort of almost a sort of very natural kind of leader, and just to set an example in just his personality, just almost just innately.
And even like on the internet, which is kind of like the Wild West, where, you know, football's very tribal, and no matter what happens, if a personality passes away or leaves a club, there's usually some quite heavy stuff on there.
That's right, yeah.
Not a whisper of any of that at the moment. I mean, it's just, I never get teary about any famous person I don't know. This is a little bit different, I think. It's just you know, a testament to his legacy to a certain extent.
It's just clear that he was in the prime of life, you know. That's the real sad thing about it. I mean, you never expect anyone to unexpectedly die by the very nature of it, but this seemed particularly just sort of out of the blue.
And we sort of view everything through the prism of football, don't we? So I say, Wales are doing well and he had a great career and stuff, so why would he not necessarily be the happiest man in the world? It's kind of important to remember that this sort of thing happens, and it rarely has anything to do with work.
Of course,
it's kind of.
But our thoughts obviously go out to his family and his friends at this time. It's the most difficult for them. So our thoughts are with them.
Absolutely. And of course, before we heard the news about Gary Speed, there were some Premier League games that were played. Manchester United and Newcastle was one of them. A good point for Newcastle, away to Old Trafford. Pete.
Siege defending.
Very much so.
It didn't get out of their six-yard box for quite a while.
Well, that said, they should have lost the game because it was never a penalty kick. So it was an incredible decision.
Yeah, but it was a ridiculous goal as well. It was a bit of a fluke goal as well.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, fair point.
And, you know, stay on your feet.
Yeah.
stay on your feet.
Oh. But he won it so cleanly, though.
He did, yeah, he really did.
It was a textbook centre-half last-ditch challenge.
Could only happen to Rio.
And you'd be delighted with that initially when you made it, because that's what the central defenders live for a lot of the time. And to look over and see the linesman
flagging,
the referee giving it one, you'd be devoured by
one
that.
One thing I would like to point out is that something that was waved away, even by Alan Shearer himself on Match of the Day, Wayne Rooney kicking out at Colaccini.
I thought that was really bad behaviour.
When are people going to start realising that is unacceptable? And we sort of say, oh, it's part and parcel of his game, he's an aggressive player, he wants to win. That's not allowed, you know. I don't care whether he was really close to the ball or whether he wasn't. If he made contact with the ball, he's not going to get that ball back because it's going to just slide out of his...
He's not trying to play the ball there, really.
So I didn't see... It just looked like frustration to me. But the referee didn't take any action at all, did he?
No. Ben Arthur looked like a woman scorned. a furious wife.
Yeah, the reason, a foul's a foul. You're not going to go, oh, he's frustrated, it's all right.
Yeah. No, you know, absolutely not.
Oh, well, if he hadn't handballed it, it would have gone in, wouldn't it? So, yeah, you know, he had to.
That really annoyed me, that, because he does that every single match. And is he going to keep doing that when he's 32, 33?
Looks like the sort of player that he probably will, won't he? He has toned it down, but it's still there.
It's not going to do his appeal to UEFA any good, is it?
No.
They're going to stand in front of them and they're going to go, did you see what happened the other week?
Yeah.
What are you smashing stuff up for now, Wayne?
What I'm saying is he's not trying to nick the ball and play it. He's not He's just trying to thump it and get it out of there, and it's so reckless.
Well, he's trying to go, well, the ball's really close, I can get away with just booting someone as hard as I can. I think that's the main problem. That's why Hatem got angry about it.
What a performance from Tim Krul again, Pete.
Yeah, he's been incredible. I mean, look at the stop on the line from Danny Simpson.
Oh,
that was amazing.
I've never seen anything like that before. Goodness me,
absolutely sensational stuff. Down the bottom of the table, Sunderland lost at home to Wigan 2-1. Lots of pressure on Stevie Bruce.
Yeah. If anything was a sort of sacking in the post, a home loss to Wigan, it's got to be up there.
Because Martinez is under pressure as well.
Yeah.
But it's just that. Can we talk about the last goal? Can we do for the rest of the show?
Was it a glol?
Oh, God.
There's about three glols in that.
Yeah.
So, like, Larson just sort of, he just fell over, didn't he? It was like he was playing dead. He was like, oh, I don't want to deal with this.
Where's Brown?
No, Wes Brown sort of did the initial mix-up. It was crossed over, Larson had a chance to clear and just fell over.
Oh, my God.
It was almost as if the goalkeeper played a sort of looping long ball short to Brown in the first place. It's like a catalogue of errors.
Yeah. I just like the crap banner that those two fans had out. It looked like it was like
six pieces of A4.
Yeah, look, six pieces of A4 stuck together saying Bruce out.
Get a bed sheet.
Yeah.
Get a bed sheet.
Well,
the
worst thing, maybe they're not sure yet.
The bed sheet is the zenith of all
the worst thing is, they don't want to ruin a bed sheet. I'm not losing a divan over this.
I'm mildly dissatisfied. this will increase each week until the results pick up.
A flipping duvet cover would be the next thing if you can.
The problem with it for me was that the Sunderland fans started saying you're just a Geordie, big fat Geordie, whatever.
Have they just realised?
They've just noticed. Bruce after the game acknowledged that and sort of said, well, I can't let where I'm from. And it's like, you shouldn't really acknowledge that. That's nothing to do with you. That's nothing to do. You're at the foot of the table. Things aren't going very well. You're near enough. You know.
I will stick up for Bruce in a minute. But before I do, I
put the boot in first.
I just want to say that
your own damage.
He did say the other day, oh, I've never walked away from anything.
That's rubbish. Absolute rubbish.
All those times you did. It wasn't that long ago.
He's just signed a new deal, pretty much. He's not going to walk away. No. An idiot will walk away.
Now defend him.
Yeah, well, I will defend him by saying that, contrary to popular belief, he's not actually spent that much money.
He has signed 29 players since 2009.
I'm not saying he's faultless, but he's generated a lot of money in sales as well with Henderson and Bent. Mm. Also, they finished 10th last season.
But why doesn't anybody want to play for him? Why is all the strikers went, I just don't want to, I just, Bent left, fucking Jan wanted to go as well.
The Jan situation's so odd, it's just so shrouded in mystery. Very, very weird, but clearly something's gone on there.
Yeah, it's
true. I mean, you know, there was the whole sort of thing about that Roy Keane used to say about the shops aren't good enough up there and stuff. But there's got to be more to it than that.
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but go back to duvets as well as a form of protest banner. It'd be quite good if it's cold.
Wrap yourself up in it.
If you're so annoyed, you're
live
warm
the
again.
Protest.
Yeah, exactly. Just hold it up.
Yeah.
Like in your thinking. What about Spurs? Another victory. They're right up there. If they win the game in hand on Manchester United, they go above them.
Very, very consistent for Spurs, aren't they?
I think it's because all the eyes have been on the two Manchester clubs and Chelsea's and Arsenal's misfortunes. Spurs have just come through.
To be fair to Redknapp, he's obviously playing the Europa League. He's playing kids in the Europa League. Yeah. He's not got this fatigue. And did they not? I'm pretty sure the game against West Brom, I think I'm right in saying there was no Van der Vaart and no Modric.
Yeah, they're missing them both.
This is an excellent win for them. I know West Brom aren't any great shakes or anything, but away from home, you know, it's a good performance.
Yeah, indeed it is. Liverpool won, Manchester City won. That's a good point there for, well, Manchester United, I suppose. They maybe thought they were going to lose a bit of ground, but the Liverpudlians did them a favour and nearly won the game.
I think you know what? It's been a bit of a hallmark of Liverpool this season, dominating games, especially at home, not winning them. Mm. They need to get those points on the board, because people like Suarez and then later on Carroll, who just seems to be getting sort of pity appearances now.
Yeah, it's already as well.
That, I mean, that was a nailed on goal for me, that until Hart stuck his hand out.
You're not any argument from me if you say that if you put the ball on Andy Carroll's head 10 yards out, he's a good header of the ball.
But he's offering so little else.
Beyond that, you know, what else is he offering? He can't get a yard on the defender most of the time because he's too slow.
But the dynamic of the game changes so much when he comes on, and maybe it's because the players like Downing, you know, who are the wide men, just think the only thing we can do is put the ball in the air to
whip it in there.
But Downing's another one that I don't think has particularly performed that
much. At least he's training.
at least he's sober.
He runs around the
You look at their front line, and I sort of think Man City, they're being a little bit more adventurous this season than they were last season. I mean, they kept like 20 clean sheets, I think, last season in the league, or 18 or something. And this season, you can score a goal past Man City. Yeah. They're going to score six against you, but you may as well have a crack.
I mean, they could have won it at the end as well. If Silva sort of did dally by his own standards, he's got very quick feet, which he didn't sort of use. And Liverpool got time to sort of get back and get three men on the line.
Yeah,
clear. They still had the chance to win it, which shows sort of how robust they are.
I can't quite remember who Dzeko took the ball past down on the line.
It was me.
Was it you? If it was Lucas, he was already on a booking.
It was Lucas, yeah.
Or was it? I was saying, take a booking there.
He hit the deck, didn't he?
You should have taken him out, but okay.
Lucas had had an excellent game.
Well, he's been good generally this season. He's had so much stick, Lucas. He's really taken a lot of flack, but he seems to be winning over the fans.
What do you think to Mario Balotelli sending off?
I didn't think it was a sending off, personally.
Wasn't it all clumsy? Just the Liverpool players just surrounding the referee?
I think that was part of it. Yeah, I think to a certain extent his reputation has started to precede him a little bit, and that could be a problem because he's still a young man. He needs to really.
I think he was tearing around with a lot of energy, though, wasn't he? So I think it will have made the foul look worse than it was. We've got to remember the ref sees it once at normal speed, you know, and I can see how that would have looked worse than it was.
But then he argued with Mancini as well, didn't he? Old Balotelli.
I think he was pleading his innocence.
But the other thing is, you know, I'm not saying Dalglish is the worst culprit of this, but he has certainly been known in the past to sort of heap a little bit of pressure on referees and be disappointed with decisions and stuff. You can't have it both ways. If your players are going to surround the referee and put such pressure on him to make a decision, he's going to get the occasional one wrong, and it's going to come back and bite you if you do it that way. Also, that Balotelli thing sort of spawned two of the most hilarious pieces of punditry I've ever heard. Right, one was Gary Neville saying, "Well, he wouldn't get away with that in my dressing room." Well, I think Eric Cantona probably did.
Yeah.
And two, Souness going, "Well, you can't afford to have a player in your squad who gives away needless sendings off." Really? Because I'm pretty sure you might have done your fair share of those. Yeah.
I like the idea that Gary Neville is he talking about his Sky Sports dressing room? Because he's not a manager, is he?
No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. Sorry, you saying that Cantona one. I saw a programme on Cantona the other day. Like, all the Man United players said after he kicked that Palace fan, all Ferguson said in the dressing room was to he was having a go at David May for having a part in conceding the goal, and he turned around to Eric Cantona and I just went, "Eric, you can't do that." And then carried on. That's what he said.
Kid gloves. Jesus.
Absolutely, man.
Indeed.
You can't do that. Sorry, boss, I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, should we tell me before then?
I've been doing it away from the pitch loads.
Sky's coverage, well, not just Sky, but sort of some of the newspapers as well, the coverage of Balotelli is confusing to me because, like, as Jim, I think we were chatting about it, or someone, I was chatting about it with someone, and they just sort of glossed over the fact that Balotelli has scored 9 in 10 at the age of 21.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, but look at all this other stuff he does. And you'd think that they'd like having him in the Premier League. Yeah. He's caused a lot of debate, a lot of coverage, he's pretty box office, and he's a good player. I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of the stuff he does, it's silly rather than, like, harming anyone.
Yeah. Right.
I'll tell you why, because he's not bloody English. If we had an eccentric English footballer like that, we'd be like, oh, he's the crown jester of, you know, like they do with Paul Gascoigne, you know.
I don't think he's a bad bloke, Balotelli.
No, I don't think so. Good win for Norwich at home against QPR 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they seem to be Paul Lambert's good coach.
They look apart.
They Holt.
Yeah, the Holtomania.
It's a secret weapon, isn't it?
Did you watch his movement before his goal?
Oh, yeah.
He just stopped, and then it went to the byline. Like, usually with the striker, when the guy gets to the byline, you move backwards so you can receive.
Yeah.
He just stood there on the back post and just went,
thing.
And then just went, oh, God. Ran and just pile drived it into the net. It was brilliant.
I think all the other defenders are running around thinking that there's a lot of off the ball movement. He counteracts that by not moving. And he bamboozles them, and he's got himself
another
winner.
He just looks like a camera or something.
And a lot of players header a ball, he headbutts it.
Yeah.
It's different.
And him and Morrison up front, just great stuff. I mean, and they could keep him in the league.
Helgeson's another one. Headers the ball so powerfully.
Yeah.
And it's funny because about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was saying, oh, there's not enough good headers of the ball around these days. And they just come from nowhere. Yeah. Well, not from nowhere, but they start scoring loads of headed goals. I mean, to be honest, Liverpool could do worse than just swapping Carroll for Holt. Both did it 10 minutes each.
Wouldn't that be great?
Holt will chip in. Chip in.
Oh, dear. Right, let's get down at the Championship, where Bristol City beat Southampton 2-0. Mm. And West Ham beat Derby 3-1.
Let's talk about the Bristol City Southampton.
Well, I was just about to say the lead has been cut at the top to 2 points. Big Sam is bearing down on the Saints.
It's the first time this season I've been able to say this.
That you're happy?
Southampton were really poor. They were really poor.
Oh, dear. Well, we're on the South Coast. Not that it was on the South Coast that game, but you get the point. Portsmouth 1, Leicester City 1. Michael Appleton's first game in charge of Pompey.
It's his second goal. First home game.
David Nugent.
Yeah.
Scoring.
Yeah. If it had to be anyone.
Yeah. Mm. Nice goal as well.
He'll be pleased with that.
Did he celebrate?
Yeah, he did.
Didn't someone parade him around on their shoulders or something? I can move on from this nightmare.
I don't think he really liked Portsmouth that much, to be honest.
I watched his England goal again the other day, and it's just, my goodness, lifetime away that was.
Yeah. Great goal. What a hit.
It was a good hit. He missed a sitter actually in that game as well.
Get it on target.
Yeah. But he responded when it mattered. Former Leicester City manager, Sven-Göran Eriksson. Do you remember him?
Yes.
He's flown over to Iran to discuss the possibility of taking over the helm of Tehran-based club Persepolis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the way Ali Daei played?
And
I think it might be. I remember that from the induction to the Hall of Fame. I think it might be, yeah. Mm,
good memory.
It's a very good film of the same name.
It's reported old Svenigans will be offered just over £1 million for his services.
He really is a human metal detector, isn't he? As Pete pointed out.
I wonder what services even are as well. In that situation, it doesn't necessarily manage the club.
It does sound very disconcerting.
I think he just goes out in the desert and then just goes, oil over there.
Yeah.
There is oil there. And then they drill at that point.
Yeah. Mm. And there is Emil Heskey.
He's never coached in Asia. He's coached in Africa. Well, Ivory Coast.
You say coached, accepted money.
Accepted money from Africans, North Americans. And obviously Europeans.
Yeah.
I got all the money.
So now the Asians are getting involved. Yeah. So, well done.
He's more like a consultant than a manager, isn't
he? Yeah, I think
he just comes in and he goes, yes. Look at my CV. Do what those teams did.
I also read today that he's
from a certain point.
There's a chance he might go to Anshi. The chance they want to get him in.
Oh, is that right? They were looking at Hiddink as well, weren't they?
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, I'm not sure if he'll be that good at Anshi, to be honest.
Yeah, but will he be that good anywhere? He doesn't care anymore, does he?
He hasn't cared for ages.
Yeah. That man was sunburned, surely.
Well, he got
in the hot climes.
Anyway, back to the Championship. There was some great comebacks there. Hull 2, Burnley 3. Burnley were down two goals, and scored on 78. 82 and 93 minutes.
That's worth the money, isn't it?
Isn't it just? Eddie Howe's men.
It's not really happening for Eddie Howe and Burnley at the moment. It's down there, aren't they, still?
Well, maybe that result will galvanise them. There was also another 3-2 away win. This was for Reading away at Ipswich. Reading, two injury time goals.
They were 1-0 up and 2-1 up as well.
Yeah.
Paul Jewell's lost a couple like that recently, hasn't he?
Five consecutive league losses for Paul.
Yeah, they're not doing well.
He's going to take it out on the BMW tonight.
Oh, yeah. Sexy Paul Jewell.
Bow, wow.
What is seen...
No, I just set upon it with a golf club.
Yeah. What has been seen can never be unseen.
Oh, that said, Ronaldinho's tape in the week. Did we all see that?
I haven't seen that. No,
what's that one?
I'm aware it exists, so I presume you've watched it.
What is it?
Yeah. Watched it, downloaded it for future reference if I ever need to use it for anything.
It's just him wanking.
What on earth? He's fallen so low. 5 years ago, there'd have been a woman there. She'd have done that for him.
Just Ronnie in a webcam. Nice to see that, you know.
Back to basics.
It's time for the SBL. If ever there was. Kilmarnock 1, Rangers 0. Rangers lead at the top is only 4 points, James.
Huge win for Celtic as well.
Told you it wasn't over.
Celtic play just can't get enough after every goal.
Yeah, they do, which is weird.
I watched.
It's not the best Depeche Mode song. Sort it out.
I watched the.
They're going to play Enjoy the Side.
Yeah, definitely.
Play that at Arsenal.
I watched the. I watched that match, the 5-0, with French commentary. And the best thing is sort of went in French, but he broke accent to say the words Gary Hooper. Yeah. So he'd be sort of going, no, this is your football, you're a good lad. Gary Hooper. It was really good. It really made me smile.
I like that. Motherwell couldn't capitalise, though. They drew 0-0 at home with Dundee United. But they're still only 9 points off the top.
They've still got to play the big boys at some point.
There you go, see.
Did also notice that Celtic, they're advertising a DVD called The Greatest Celtic Goals in the World Ever. They let a 5-year-old title.
Yeah. Moving even further back.
Celtic, maybe, you know what I mean? There's a few other. Boston Celtics.
Moving even further back, the Kilmarnock goal. Did you see how badly they were playing the offside trap for that one?
It
just sort of loops in and the fella just goes, oh, I'm
thanks.
I'm on. Bang. <Yeah.
laughs> Well, they got in behind the defence a fair few times as well. It was coming.
Yeah. From SPL to La Liga. That's the format, isn't it?
Yeah.
Getafe 1, Barcelona 0.
Yeah. We saw that game, didn't we?
The Burger Kings.
Yeah, it was a stunning result, really. But Barca did look sort of off the pace a little. You know, they did have their normal rhythm. They looked a bit leggy. Yeah.
They could have scored 15 goals in the second half still, for me.
But they didn't.
Messi hit the post. He had it in the net as well. Lovely move. Oh, man, so disappointing.
No goals. No points.
Did you see Inigo Martinez's goal from the halfway line?
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Staggering. The second time he's done it this season.
That's not even his best halfway line goal this season.
That's for real saucy, then.
Yeah, he scored.
It was an injury time winner as well.
I know, yeah, mate.
3-2.
What are you doing shooting from the halfway line? At injury time, to be fair.
I must say, I've not really, you know, kept tabs on Sociedad that much. So he might be doing it sort of like 9 times a game. We don't know. But
yeah. Well, the last one he scored was against Athletic, wasn't it? Mm.
That was my favourite one because it was a proper drill.
It's a shot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't a sort of speculative punt. As
the keeper's off his line, sort of
more.
David Beckham-esque sort of thing. But the first one was just poof.
He also scored an incredible own goal. Was it the Spanish under 20?
That was from miles out as well.
Yeah. That was like that Irish
volley. Yeah. A back-heeled volley over his own keeper.
That should have been like given
David De Gea
to Spain.
As well.
Do you know what I mean? It was that good.
Yeah, De Gea and goal as well, yeah.
Levante. 4-0 winners against Gijon. Back to winning ways. They're 2 points off Barcelona.
Yeah.
Levante, 2 points off Barcelona. Okay, Barca 8 points
six
off the
points,
top.
Yeah, Barca are 6 points behind now. Which
but it
is
shows
worrying.
How underperforming Barcelona have been.
Mm-hmm. Aruna Kone's been a real steal for them. Though. They've got him on loan from Sevilla. And I think because he's playing number two, everyone thinks he's a right back. I think I'll be all right. He's going to cross, he's going to go. Oh, he scored again.
Do you remember like a few weeks ago we were talking about it, and I looked up Kone and I'm pretty sure he went on like 3 years without scoring a league goal, Sevilla.
I wouldn't.
That's because he was playing right back.
Yeah, exactly. But Barcelona, they're still not considered they got home this season.
Yeah, it was just 6 points off Real Madrid. I mean, Atletico Madrid 4-1.
Given how tight La Liga can be, I mean, it could genuinely sort of have a, you know, decider on where the title goes. You know, Barcelona, you know, I suppose beat Madrid once and it makes a big difference. But if you know the El Clasico is coming up, if Madrid win that, that's massive.
Mm. Yeah, because
absolutely massive because they're the best they've been under Mourinho.
Because 6 points doesn't sound like an awful lot, but you've got to put it into perspective of how many points Real Madrid will drop over the season, which isn't many.
Yeah,
and how well they're playing.
Oh, of course.
And how many penalties Ronaldo will score every single match,
and free kicks and goals, regular goals.
Because the keeper was sent off, wasn't he, for Atletico?
Very, very harshly. In my Benzema just knocked it past him, and the keeper put his hand out. I don't understand.
Defenders covering, so you could argue that it wasn't a professional foul, but you know, that's how it goes.
They went down to 9 at one point as well.
Blimey. Yeah.
Also in La Liga, Valencia beat Vallecano 2-1 away. Lost Che only 1 point behind Barca, 7 off the top, of course.
Soldado didn't score in this game, but he's been in incredible form lately. Yeah. Really, really has. I mean, he must be making a play for the sort of Spanish squad, the form he's in. He got a hat-trick a little while ago. He's really, really just coming into his own. It's good to see because he looked like he might be a little bit of a nearly man for his whole career. And it's good to see Valencia getting back up there as well. It's easy to forget how much trouble they've had with the sort of financial difficulties they've been in.
Yeah, massively.
They're just overachieving so much. It's brilliant.
Indeed they are, Jimbo. Indeed they are. Let's go to Serie A, where Milan beat Chievo 4-0 and Zlatan scored his 100th Serie A goal.
It was a great goal as well.
It was indeed.
It was. And it had that lovely loop to it that you don't see that much.
I think it might have caught a bit of a deflection, but I reckon he meant it.
Yep.
Yeah.
He scored a great penalty as well.
Yeah.
I love how the commentators call him Ibra.
Yeah.
Milan reportedly interested in signing Carlos Tevez, perhaps on loan.
Do we need to even mention how mad that would be?
Mm. Man City, just, they're not going to take it in one line. And to be fair, they're one of the few clubs who can just sort of go, nope. Can't afford to just let him rot.
There's another loan deal, though, concerning a Milan player, which is quite a funny one. Santos, who are apparently going to sign Pele as well, are hoping to sign Robinho on a year-long loan for their centenary year in 2012. The centenary year is a huge thing for Brazilian clubs.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah,
and so they want... Robinho, a former player of theirs, on a year-long loan. And they're acting as if, oh, Milan will be all right with that.
Yeah, as if like that's a favour.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they've heard. It's our centenary season.
Yeah, they'll be fine. They have anniversaries in Italy, don't they?
Yeah. I think so, Jimbo.
Come out for Rio for his payment.
Yeah. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Juventus beat Lazio in Rome 1-0.
Mm. Yeah, and they're going great guns. It's good to see.
There was a lot of missed chances in that game.
Yeah, I said Del Piero going to be off to the MLS. It looks like he might be now.
Yeah, his agent said he's rejecting an approach from a Premier League club, Blackburn, probably.
Yeah.
I think he would go to the MLS. Also in Italy, have you heard that, obviously the country's economy is struggling like most of Europe and the world.
The Eurozone.
Indeed it is. And some of Italy's footballers are getting involved in a grassroots campaign to buy Italian government bonds, which will hopefully help the country's economy. Footballers to the rescue.
Isn't it Damiano Tomasi who's behind all this?
He's one of the big boys.
He's spearheading it. Because Jim sent us this story around, and you sort of put us in with a little hook by saying, oh yeah, Ibrahimovic is getting involved. I didn't see much mention of it.
No, there's no mention of him. It's just, you know, this is happening. Be. He's in Italy. It could happen.
Yeah. He's a footballer.
Imagine if Ibra saves the Eurozone.
But what if they all do it, and because he's such a contrary bastard, he won't do it.
Yeah.
He'd refuse. We just need one more dollar. No.
what if they do it too much, and Italy becomes too rich, and they sort of just take over Europe? The Italian football. Serie A becomes some sort of force.
And we go back to the glory days of the 90s in Serie A. I'm all for it.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, politically.
Yeah. And then Serie A invades Syria, and it is really confusing news reporting.
Yeah.
So,
the plot falls.
We wait with bated breath on that one, I think. Well, let's quickly go to the sanctuary of the Bundesliga then.
It could also invade Surrey as well. So
it won't do.
It won't.
And we've already gone to the Bundesliga, Pete.
Sorry.
Which is already reassuringly sensible.
Yeah. That's right. Or is it though, Jimbo? Because Bayern lost again, this time away to Mainz, 3-2.
Yeah. The highlight of the weekend was Jan Schlaudraff's goal for Hannover.
Oh yeah,
equaliser against Hamburg.
Talk us through it.
Straight from a corner to about 20 yards out, super volley. Super like jump volley straight into the corner. It should have been worth 2.5 goals. It was incredibly good. Honestly, it was like, you know, sometimes you see a volley where they'll control it and put it in, or they'll hit it quite hard with the laces. He has just tried to whack the absolute shit out of the ball.
Was it like Mendieta's at the Nou Camp?
Yeah. I would say it was harder than that.
Ooh.
It was like Altintop last season.
Yeah,
but it wasn't quite as high. You definitely check it out. It was incredible.
I do like a corner ping to the edge of the box for someone to volley.
First time volley.
Because it's almost like a waste of a corner.
Yeah.
If it goes wrong. But if you've got scores on the edge of it.
Oh, no.
But it's worth 19 fluffed corners for the one that goes in.
But for me, if it was me doing it, it'd be near 1,000 fluffed. I could stand on a pitch with someone like someone
rolling it on the floor
all the time, and I'd probably not even connect some of the time.
Elsewhere in the Bundesliga, Dortmund have gone joint top with Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Yeah, they were written off a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, incredible. Bayern were sitting pretty.
We've got to go and watch Dortmund.
Yes.
80,000 people average. It's like 79,000 people average attendance.
Just that stand as well, the huge, huge stand they've got. It just bounces. You know, it's just like this ripple of just fun.
Well, I'm going to see Hamburg Wolfsburg next March. So that'd be quite good. They play at the Olympiastadion, so that'd be brilliant.
See if you can get it moved there.
Yeah, well, I'll try. Yeah, I'll do my best, yeah.
Dortmund couldn't beat Arsenal, though, could they, Jimbo?
No, they couldn't.
No, they couldn't. Right, let's go to Holland. We've got a Cruyff versus Van Gaal update.
Probably some crying in there as well.
Some sort of celebrity boxing match.
We spoke, of course, last week of Johan Cruyff and his disgust at the Ajax board appointing Louis van Gaal on there as well. And he was fuming, absolutely fuming.
Cruyffing,
to say the least. Well, Johan Cruyff and 10 Ajax youth coaches are actually going to go to court to fight the appointment of Louis van Gaal and two others. It was Martin Sturkenboom and Danny Blind, former player as well, who are going to be the directors of the Dutch club.
I will not be surprised if Cruyff offers to sort this out via a match, because have you seen who the coaches are?
Indeed, they are Frank de Boer and Ronald de Boer, Jaap Stam, Dennis Bergkamp, Wim Jonk and Mark Overmars.
That is some barbarity. Yeah.
Imagine it.
It's enough to make your stomach Cruyff turn.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cruyff churn? No.
it's enough to send you blind.
Cruyff's been oddly humble about the whole thing, isn't he? Saying that.
No.
Listen, have you read the actual quotes? He said that Van Gaal needs to realise it's not about he or I anymore. It's about a younger generation. You know, we need to hand the reins over. You know, and I'm sure this is some sort of smokescreen for him sort of gaining full control later. But
I just imagine like Van Gaal's response just being a YouTube video of him just playing with this massive brass ball. Don't you like that, Croy? That's what I say to you.
You know, Danny Blind's son, Daley Blind, who plays for Ajax, looks a bit like you, Luke.
Does he? Lucky boy. Bit of a looker, is he?
Should we go to Ghana?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a little treat for you. Well, especially you, look. You're the Hearts of Oak fan amongst us.
They're my Ghanaian team, absolutely.
They've got a £1,000 fine.
I know, I'm a fan of theirs, so I know about this.
Yeah, well, they delayed the kickoff in their match against Ebzua Dwarves. Now, the reason for this delay was that two Hearts of Oak players were apparently forced out of the stadium by Dwarves fans and made to buy tickets to get back in again.
How did they have money in their shorts? Did they have it in the behind their shin pads?
No idea.
Maybe there's some sort of barter system there to give them their boots or something.
How are they forced out the stadium?
It's like a piss take. It's not like we're forcing at the stadium so you can't play. No, you've got to pay to get back in.
I'm up front. Well, if the price is right, pal.
You're not, are you?
Oh, dear. Elsewhere in Ghana, the Kotoko coach, Maxwell Konadu, said his players had an indecent emotional attack by three women who were outside the changing room, and the three women were should I say touching the players as they went in and trying to distract them from the game. So very strange happenings. Literally underhand tactics. You're absolutely right there.
You know, Kotoko's nickname is the Porcupine Warriors.
Oh, brilliant. That is brilliant.
That should be the name of the team, surely.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh dear. Right then, and as we're globetrotting, let's go to Western Samoa. American Samoa, more specifically. The team who are joint bottom of the FIFA ranking system in 204th place. Once got beaten 31-0 off Australia, which is a record, of course. They're out of the 2014 World Cup qualifying after losing in an Oceania qualifier match 1-0 to Samoa. And the goal was scored in the 90th minute.
That is grim.
I think they were the darlings of world football for a very brief moment, American Samoa. They ended their 30-game losing streak by beating Tonga 2-1, and then they drew 1-1 with the Cook Islands.
Their goals were hilarious in that match. Like, the keeper just pounded onto his own net. But I mean, the where they were playing, like the trees and the mountains and stuff behind them were just like, I would not concentrate on the football.
It's not a bad lot.
It looks beautiful there.
I've been to the Cook Islands, and it's not very big, and I'm surprised they've got any sort of football team at all, really.
Because it's just, I'll just lie here and just look at the scenery, because it's so beautiful.
It's amazing, it's an amazing place.
The documentary about them, Next Goal Wins.
That's right.
I saw the trailer of it. I think I've isolated what the problem is, because the coach, a couple of times, says, if you run out of breath, reach inside, pull your lungs out and breathe on it, and then stick it back inside.
Yeah, that's not going to help.
That is not an inspirational message for me.
Is that Thomas Rongen, the coach?
Oh, I don't know. No. I think it was another one of
Steve Keane.
and another bit, he's actually in the changing room at this point. He says, you let them score 8 last time and 7 this time. That's progress.
Yeah, there's a really, really interesting thing as well, which in their culture they have what they consider to be a third gender, which is if there's like a sort of feminine male, they're treated as a girl, even though they're sort of biologically male. And one of their defenders is this sort of, they have a name for it, I forget what it is, but it's considered to sort of be a woman despite being a male, and it's also considered to be sort of like a third gender that's just accepted and normal.
Not a lot of biologists on that island, clearly. No.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought so. So here we are. So yeah, Next Goal Wins, that's out next year, I think. Mm. Now it's time for Going for Gold.
Going for Gold. Gold. Mm. It is, Marcus. Let me just grab me clues.
I'm on a hat trick.
You are, Luke.
No, you got the hat trick, didn't you?
No, I had Peter Reid, and I got one before that.
I thought
consecutive.
But you're in the lead, though. You got six. Didn't you?
Yeah, I've got Luke Moore, then Peter Reid. Yeah, I'm on a hat trick, yeah.
Luke Moore, Peter Reid. 6-5-4-1.
What a double act.
First clue, lads. I was born 16th of December 1966.
1 year before the summer.
Stop.
Oh, hang on.
Stop. Eric Cantona?
No.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, I knew.
I played 21 times for England. My middle name is Frank.
Stop. Frank Lampard.
Couldn't resist.
No. Doesn't even make sense.
No. I once played for a Swedish football club, Grebbestad.
Stop. Carry on.
I think you should be kicked out for that.
Yeah.
Outrageous.
Sorry, boys.
Alex Ferguson said I could start a fight in an empty house. Next clue.
Yeah.
Talking about Newcastle, it has all had a damaging effect on my career.
Oh, God.
This is going to annoy me.
In 2001, I was sold to Leicester City for $1.6 million.
Stop. Dion Dublin.
No.
No, it's not
Dublin. Dion Dublin pops up a lot on this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I just like saying it.
I've won the UEFA Cup Winners' Cup and the UEFA Super Cup as well.
God, this is a tough
My mind's gone completely blank. Yeah. I can't think of any footballer.
Here's the killer. I'm 5'6".
Stop. Tony Cotty.
Stop.
No.
Dennis White.
Dennis White.
Yes! That's the hat trick.
Bollocks.
That is the hat trick.
He could start a fight in an empty house.
I knew it was as soon as I said Cotty because he won the League Cup.
Cotty never bit a taxi driver.
The thing that threw me is when you said his age and that he played for England, I kept thinking of World Cup 90 players because Wise would have been sort of old enough there.
Oh dear, oh dear. Well done, Lukey. Right, it's time for emails.
Thank you for your email, lady.
Hello, Ramble Bags.
Hello.
Thanks.
Good, isn't it? Nice. Just a couple of observations from the latest rounds of games in the Prem. One, what was Benoit Asuakoto doing wearing odd boots? One was white/purple and the other was blue/yellow. Yet more amazing behaviour from this maverick.
I don't know, I didn't notice that.
Channeling the spirit of Steve Claridge.
Mm. I saw Sammy Amiobi asked that same question on Twitter.
Oh, so. Did he? There was an Italian player called Anoni, was his surname. He played for Celtic and he used to wear one green and one white. I think it was a green and white. It was obviously with the colour.
I used to wear red and black Converse when I thought I was freaking
so
cool. No, I look like a dick. Let's make that clear.
Did you just like screw studs into the bottom of a normal pair of Converse?
Really?
Wear them on the pitch. Indie footballer. Bet you did.
Leighton Baines has thought about it.
I reckon we'll see this more though. Odd boots. It's a new way to be flash.
Claridge used to do it all the time. Claridge did for gospel band.
Claridge didn't mean to do it though.
No.
Doesn't realise that you know you're meant to do it any other way. Second part of this email is where are Neil Warnock's eyebrows? I saw a segment on him on the Premier League World Show a few days back, and his eyebrows are conspicuous by their absence. That is from Spencer Salt in New Zealand.
Spencer Salt, another person in the public eye who hasn't got any eyebrows is the guy who plays Doctor Who, Matt Smith.
Mm. Yeah, I guess he doesn't.
He never has any eyebrows. I don't know why.
Well, have you seen Warnock's eyebrows? Then let us know.
Yeah, but the way Spencer said that was quite accusatory. Oh, where are they?
We don't have them.
Never even met him.
Maybe we need to have some sort of charitable organisation. Yeah. Eyebrows for Warnock.
Mm. If we all clip a bit off our own, send him a little mix.
Multicoloured.
Little eyebrow cocktail.
Maybe Warnock's one of the third sex.
He definitely isn't.
He looked good in drag, I reckon.
Even an American Samoan biologist could tell that Warnock was all man. And now it's profile time, good people. Indeed it is. Now then, what have we got here? We've got a tournament. We've got a bloody tournament going in. It's World Cup 74.
Jiminy.
Can you Adam and Eve it?
That's literally history.
It is. Isn't it always, though? Right then. It was the 10th World Cup tournament, and it started on the 13th of June, 1974.
Oh, 7 years after the Summer of Love.
Yeah.
We don't normally have after the Summer of Love.
No. The impact would still have been felt, though.
Yeah, I think so,
But
yeah.
Everyone who participated was born before the Summer of Love.
Yeah.
So it's no coincidence.
No.
It's important to point out there's never a coincidence when the Summer of Love is involved.
No.
Oh, dear. It was the first World Cup where the FIFA World Cup trophy was awarded to the winners. Because the Jules Rimet Trophy was previously won 3 times by Brazil, and they got to keep it.
I know we've discussed this before, but if Brazil win it again, do they keep the latest one?
That appears to be the custom.
Or Italy.
Yeah, or Italy.
Yeah.
It has to be Germany.
Yeah. No, that does appear to be the custom. I think that's the case,
So let's hope none of them win it, because it'll be the Sepp Blatter trophy in the next one.
Ooh, imagine that. That'd ruin it forever, wouldn't it? You just get his bust.
You'd rather not win it. You get to the final and lose.
Oh, dropped it.
16 teams contested this tournament, which included the hosts West Germany, Italy, Holland, Brazil, Argentina and Scotland, and first-time qualifiers East Germany, Zaire, Haiti and Australia. England failed to qualify.
Haiti in a World Cup's amazing. Yeah. A World Cup where Haiti have qualified and England didn't.
Yeah, and there were only 16 teams,
as
well.
Yeah.
That's right. Holland and Poland hadn't qualified since 1938 and would go on to have very good tournaments.
Oh, they had a great team in Poland.
Holland not qualifying for that long, it seems crazy as well, doesn't it?
Indeed. This was the tournament where arguably total football was taken to the big stage. But, you know, we'll talk about these things in due course.
We've got group stages first, haven't we?
We have. There were some extraordinary results and incidents in the first round that we'll never see the likes of again. Just the way that the world, politics and all the rest of it has evolved, it just simply can't happen again. So in the first round, there was four groups. Group one was West and East Germany in the same group. Chile and Australia. Big Paul Breitner, who's a dwarf inductee, scored the West Germans' only goal in the opening game against Chile to get the hosts going.
East Germany beat West Germany in the group, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Well, we'll come to that. During that game, Carlos Caselli of Chile would make World Cup history, the first player to be sent off with a red card. There was players that were sent off previously, but red and yellow cards were used during the 1970 World Cup for the first time, but no player in that tournament was sent off.
They were used to get over the language barrier, weren't they, initially? So people could hide, so the players actually knew what was happening.
Yeah, indeed.
Did they just stop when they saw them? Stop.
Yeah, that's right, nobody knew.
Amber, yellow, means go
on, go again.
Get ready to run.
East Germany, they started with the one against Australia. Now, the Aussies would finish bottom of the group with 1 point, Chile third on two. The final group game was East Germany versus West Germany. And we have actually profiled East Germany, so have a look at that to hear more about their story in depth. But just to quickly go over that one, it was just a routine win for the Germans, it was meant to be. The West Germans, of course, superior team, and they were top the group and so on and so forth. They had players like Sepp Maier, Bertie Vogts, Paul Breitner, Franz Beckenbauer, Gerd Müller, Uli Hoeneß.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
When you can gloss over Gerd Müller.
Exactly. East Germany didn't have any such names, really, but stunned the world by beating the host 1-0 with a goal from Jürgen Sparwasser. So as I say, if you want to know more about that, see the East Germany profile on the website.
Be interesting to see which of the current Germany squad would be eligible for East Germany. Will that still?
Well, Ballack was. Oh, I know he's not in the current side, but Michael Ballack was famously would have been from East Germany. In Group Two, Yugoslavia, Brazil, Scotland, and Zaire, now known as DR Congo,
Dr. Congo.
Brazil weren't the force they were in the previous World Cup, but still had Jairzinho and Rivelino, amongst a few others. Brazil didn't score until their third game of the tournament. They drew 0-0 with Yugoslavia and Scotland.
Yeah, they beat Zaire, didn't they?
They did,
3-0,
yeah. Well, yeah, Scotland beat Zaire in their opening game. Peter Lorimer and Joe Jordan getting the goals. Joe Jordan scored again against Yugoslavia in a 1-1 draw there. Yugoslavia, Brazil and Scotland finished on 4 points. So it pretty much went down to who could beat Zaire by the most.
Yugoslavia smashed them about 7, didn't they?
They beat them 9-0.
9-0, yeah.
Scotland beat them 2-0 and Brazil beat them 3-0. Scotland went out by scoring one single goal less than the holders, Brazil.
That is just
one of the few teams in the history of the tournament to have gone out of the finals without losing a game. Well, absolutely.
New Zealand also did that, didn't they?
New Zealand did it recently.
But the Zaire story is quite an interesting one, because
it's very complex. Yeah.
Because the 3-0 Brazil, when they were 3-0 down and Brazil had a free kick, a lot of people would have seen this, and the Zaire player ran out from the wall.
Revelino's about to line one up.
Yeah, and the Zaire player runs out the wall and just boots the ball away, and everyone was like, oh, ha, 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 I don't even understand the rules and stuff. But what actually happened
You don't
was,
get to a World Cup finals with not understanding the rules of football.
Exactly. What actually happened was, because there was an interview with this guy called Moefa Ilunga, who gave an interview about 10 years ago about the whole Zaire experience. And what happened was they were treated shockingly badly by the government in Zaire. They weren't paid. They were not given bonuses that were due to them.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where they almost weren't going to play. And when it came to... they'd been treated awfully after their loss 9-0 to Yugoslavia. And when it came to playing Brazil, I think it was the president or someone like that...
That's right.
...said, if you lose this game 4-0... don't bother coming home.
Yeah.
You're not going to see your families ever again. And so the 3-0 down, they just resorted to desperate measures to clear the ball and stop it happening, which of course they did do in the end.
Yeah, because that was towards the end of the game.
Absolutely. And it's like almost like as you touched on earlier, because the world's sort of moved on a little bit since then. Mm. You know, it's crazy to think of that would actually happen on the biggest stage in football, you know.
Yeah, totally. And before the 9-0 against Yugoslavia, they found out that their wages, their allowances during the tournament were taken away from them. So they just half-heartedly played. And there was something incredibly odd during that game. The coach,
he was a Vidanich. Yugoslavian, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was Yugoslavian. When the score was 3-0, he subbed the keeper. Obviously the substitute keeper.
Yeah.
And he hadn't been a particularly bad game. It was 3-0. It wasn't his fault for the goals. Very, very odd indeed. He later said it was because he was under strict instructions from one of the Ministry of Sport officials from Zaire. But very odd. The fact of the matter is he made that substitution at 3-0.
It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very odd. So there's a whole Zaire thing. I mean, I implore anybody to go and do a bit more research on that.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely fascinating. It's so much more to what meets the eye. Because as you said, Luke, people just think these bunch of jokers turned up and didn't know what they were doing.
Wasn't that the famous commentary where it says the naivety of the Africans?
When
he kicked the ball away?
Yeah, of
course. It is such an iconic moment, that, as well. And it's incredible that there's such a sort of rich story behind it.
Mm. But yeah, absolutely incredible. So, Group 2, perhaps one of the more interesting ones there. And Group 3 had the Dutch, Sweden, Bulgaria and Uruguay, and this was the start of the great Dutch sides under Arenas Michels, their brilliant run to the final. Johnny Rep and Johan Naiskins amongst the goals there, and they topped the group. And
Lee Maskus, what?
It was Ari Hahn, Ruud Krol, players like that, Johan Cruyff.
Well, Sweden had a good team
Brad
as well.
Pitt.
Did all right.
Brad Pitt. Total football style, really turning heads. Absolutely sensational stuff. And that was, I think it was the 0-0 against Sweden where Cruyff's famous turn was shown to the world. You know the famous one, the Cruyff turn?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, absolutely.
That was that one. Group 4?
No, we are unfamiliar with the Cruyff turn, Marcus.
Well, that particular one, Pete, the classic, the famous one. Group 4, Italy, Argentina, Poland and Haiti. Haiti, playing in the finals for the first time. They were sensationally the team that ended Dino Zoff's run of 1,142 minutes in international football of not conceding a goal.
Great stuff.
Incredible, isn't it? It's absolutely amazing.
This is why the World Cup is amazing.
Yeah. The history of the World Cup, you know. The first player ever caught using illegal drugs at World Cup finals was Jean-Joseph of Haiti in that games as well.
When you say during the World Cup finals, what do you mean? Like, just in a game?
Well, he failed the drugs test.
All right. I thought you were just on the pitch.
Well,
it was the 70s, you know?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Maybe
chasing the dragon.
Poland were the standout team in that group. 3 wins out of 3, scoring 12 goals.
Mm. Well, that's the best Poland have ever been.
Yeah,
isn't it,
Grzegorz really? Lato up front.
Top scorer.
He was indeed.
Right, if I know.
I love the fact that Grzegorz Lato, he played like most of his career in Poland. Then he just went to Mexico to play.
He did, yeah.
Played for a club in Mexico.
Mm.
Incredible, really.
Oh,
he's
fed up with the cold.
Yeah.
No snoods required.
Yeah.
They beat Italy 2-1 with a certain Fabio Capello getting Italy's goal there. But they went out in the first round.
He's manager of England now.
He is, yeah. Now, in the semis, you had two groups, Group A and Group B. The top of the group went through.
To the final, the big final.
Group A, Holland, Brazil, East Germany and Argentina. Holland got things underway, 4-0 win against Argentina.
That is a group of death.
It's crazy, isn't it?
And that group conspired to going down to the last game where Holland played Brazil. And it was the holders against, you know, the pretenders.
The new boys. The new kids on the block.
The Dutch won 2-0. Cruyff and Naiskins. Cruyff's goal in that game is just delightful.
Yeah.
Close range volley, a wonderful setup. And the same thing happened in Group B with West Germany, Poland, Sweden and Yugoslavia. That panned out as well, that it would go down to West Germany versus Poland to see who would get into the final. And the Germans aren't going to lose a game like that.
No.
That's the
thing.
They
know how to win.
1-0 from Gerd Müller. Lato scored 6 goals in his previous 5 games going into that one, but couldn't break the German defence. And then Poland finished third. They beat Brazil 1-0 in the third place playoff. Lato again with a goal. Finished the tournament with 7 goals, top goal scorer. And also the Poles had Szarmak, who scored 5 goals And the best tournament to date for Poland.
Yeah, well, they finished third, didn't they? We have Michał Zakodny, who writes about Polish football for our blog, and he wrote a piece heavily referencing this recently. And it's that team in Poland, they're just legends. They're almost like our sort of 66 winning squad were. They're held in such high regard. And it's understandable. You know, it's incredible.
Yeah. They did excellently well. And I think, it's probably a bit ambitious to say so, but I'm sure they're looking forward to a good showing next summer as well,
In the Euros.
But it all came down to one of the greatest rivalries in world football in a memorable match between Holland and West Germany in the Olympic Stadium in Munich. Now, we spoke briefly about this match before in Johan Cruyff's profile, but we're going to talk a little bit more about it now. It was the first competitive fixture between these two. The Dutch were favourites due to their form and in the tournament and free scoring ability, but the Germans being at home and boasting some great players themselves were never going to fall short, really.
Well, at home as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that German backline included Beckenbauer, Breitner, Vogts.
Yeah,
it's tough to get through that.
And Holland still opened the scoring without the Germans touching the ball.
It's one crazy. Of the most dramatic start to a World Cup final, surely. Yeah. Something like 13, 14 passes, then Cruyff went past Bertie Vogts and he brought him down in the penalty area, which was pretty much the only time in the game, actually, Cruyff properly got the better of Vogts.
And Niskin scored it, didn't he?
Niskin scored the penalty, yeah. Again, it's a sign of the Germans, isn't it? Vogts. Most defenders would have been scared to put a foot wrong for the rest of the game. Yeah. Thinking, bloody hell. And the fear, thinking they've just scored and we haven't even touched the ball.
Yeah.
But the Germans think, right, come on, boys.
Well, it went the other way. It's just an absolute wake-up call for all of them. At the worst possible time. Yeah. We've seen it so many times, a big team concede and they're just like a wounded animal. Imagine that's Germany and it's the first minute.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what it's like, and I've watched the game before a long time ago, but it's like they scored far too early. Yeah. I'll tell you what it reminds me of, when England scored in the semi-final of Euro 96 against Germany, after about a minute.
Same happens when was it the World Cup or the Euros when Michael Owen scored really early on against Brazil. Portugal.
Yeah, that was the Euros.
Similar thing.
Yeah. Johnny Rep said much later on, he said, we wanted to humiliate the Germans. It wasn't something we'd thought about, but we did it. We started knocking the ball around and we forgot to score a second.
This is bad country.
yeah, that's right. And after 25 minutes, Germany got a penalty. Big Paul Breitner stepped up and made it 1-1. And then Gerd Müller scored what would be the winning goal and Germany's 100th World Cup goal.
And the goal that made him the top scorer in World Cup history.
Yeah.
God, they are so OCD, aren't they?
At the point, yeah.
We should have that sort of confidence in each other's abilities. Yeah. They don't panic. They don't sort of... They just go, right... It's clear that we've not started the game in the best way. Let's just galvanise
a little bit. They just know how to win.
Yeah.
For a team like, you could argue about, obviously us being English, who consistently underperform at tournaments, no matter what the status of their squad is on paper, in quotes, or what all the pundits are saying, they consistently overachieve for what they've got.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Why are people underestimating their powers? That's
absolutely
the thing, though, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah.
Especially this these next two tournaments, flipping heck.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Johan Cruyff, spoke about him earlier, became the first player to be given a yellow card during half time at a World Cup final. As the teams are walking off, he's arguing with the referee, surprisingly.
Windass.
And then in the second half, the Dutch mounted wave after wave of attacks on the West German defence, but Beckenbauer and the boys refused to be broken down and held out for the 2-1 win.
It's worth mentioning that the whole thing is on YouTube. But I watched quite a bit.
The
entire final. It's really, really good. Really, really well put together. And when the final whistle blows, it was slightly unsatisfying for me because I like the whistle to go when either the keeper or there's a free kick being taken or somebody lumps it up the field.
Yeah.
This one just sort of trickled out for a throw-in, and I thought, oh, it's the World Cup final.
It's undermined it all for me.
Yeah, it's ruined the whole
thing.
Anything,
it shouldn't count.
But when all was said and done, the West Germans had beaten one of the greatest and most unique teams that will ever be produced. I mean, they were incredible, that Dutch team.
A team, weirdly, still kind of have more historical significance than the team that went on to win, with the influence that total football had.
I know, 78, they repeated it, got to the final, were beaten by Argentina.
In a way, similar sort of forgetting to score kind of thing as well.
But look how good their team were in, 96, for example.
Their team's consistent, they've always produced players. Yeah. For the size of country they've got, we all know they've always produced huge players. It's funny, because it's almost like Brazil in 82. that's a hugely revered team in Brazil, and it didn't win anything, but they just played beautiful football, and they were a joy to watch. They had such good individuals throughout the side, and they're revered more than the 94 side that actually won it. And this Dutch team is a classic team for all time, you know.
It's interesting as well, we touched on this before, when things weren't going so well for Germany, they acknowledged it straight away and they sorted it out and they changed their youth
setup. In 2000s? Yeah.
And it's, they know how to win to the point where even when they can't do it straight away, they'll sow the seeds and do it later.
They'll play a long game. We're huge fans of German football. Aren't we? You've got to be, really. You can't argue with it.
You can't argue, and in comes the 1974 World Cup tournament, which the West Germans won.
It's quite a lot of inductees at once, that.
Yeah, sure is.
Haiti are in as well now.
Might have to build an extension.
That Zaire free kicks in. I'm delighted with that.
And their families. Come on.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Football Ramble this week. Thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. And the website is thefootballramble.com. Before we go, though, we've got to say thank you so much to everybody who attended the Football Ramble drinks on the weekend. We had a smashing time.
14,000 through the door in the end.
We did.
It was really, really good. And I just feel bad that I didn't get to speak to not even 50% of the room, but I'm sure they're happy about
that. They're not
that.
Bad. Don't feel bad.
Well, that's what I mean. That's I don't want to disrupt well, anybody. Mate. Yeah, exactly.
Jim and I were there, so they're
exactly.
We had a great range of people from Londoners to Scotland. A couple of boys from Ireland came over.
Yeah, there were. There was a girl there, which is amazing in itself, right, who has been listening since the first ever show. That predates both me and Pete.
Yeah. we're not even that committed.
She's called Helen, and I respect her more than I respect you two for that exact fact.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Righto. Jimbo, what's happening over at the website?
Oh, pixels, all kinds of stuff.
HTML.
This week on the blog, we've got suggestions for how to remove Sepp Blatter from his post, which is from myself. Dermot Corrigan on Real Betis and their slump, as well as Mikko Zakodny in the Polish version of the managerial merry-go-round, and as well as the Hall of Fame, which has now got the World Cup 74 in it. Pick live previews, the shop and the forum. Oh, get over there. There's all kinds of stuff up our internet.
How many times do you want to be told how brilliant the website is? Get up.
Yeah. And you've also got to plug your Edinburgh preview show.
Yes, I do. It's on the 7th of December. It's at the Queen's Head, which is on Denman Street, near Piccadilly Circus in London. So it's, if you say I am Zlatan on the door, that'll get you in for free. So come down, it'll be me for an hour, and also Tanya Edwards and Danny Ward, who are bloody great. So yeah,
put some details up on the forum or something, Jim.
Yes.
Imagine if Zlatan actually turned up, because that's what he would say naturally when he entered anywhere, isn't
it? I think it's
I hope that happens.
He'd get in for free then, wouldn't he?
Yeah. He would definitely heckle.
No, he would do indeed. Right, that is the end of it. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me in what's been a sad week for football. We've been the Football Ramble.
And Kamara, what a smashing game he's had, Chris Kamara. Gives Gary Speed a run. Away goes Speed. He's got a start on them all this time. Go on, Gary Speed. Get one yourself, son. And what a great goal. And Gary Speed's really wrapped things up.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.